This is Jeff Blankford, welcoming you to the March 7, 2018 edition of Takes on the World, a program on international affairs that usually comes your way the second and fourth Wednesdays each month and every other fifth Wednesday when I open the phones to get your takes on the world. During the week, you hear announcements on KZYX, what we refer to as promos for forthcoming shows, some recorded and some read by other programmers. The one I wrote for today's program, written a week ago, noted that I would, quote, speak with Grant Smith, director of the Institute for Research Middle East Policy, about the censorship of articles unfavorable to Israel in the U.S. media, and get Smith's report on a conference on the Israel lobby and U.S. policy the Smith Institute is co-hosting at the National Press Club in Washington on March 2nd, featuring well-known U.S. and Israeli public figures that the mainstream media is almost certain to ignore, end quote. Well, in truth, I was certain, not almost certain, about that, and I turned out to be right. With the exception that it being a Washington event, the conference was carried live by C-SPAN 2 and will be available on YouTube for those who may discover its existence on their own. Moreover, KZYX is likely to be the only public radio station where anything will be said about the conference, as well as on a subject which is equally verboten and which I will be discussing with Grant Smith at 20 minutes past the hour, and that's the censorship of news unfavorable to Israel by our national media. It is only logical that the domination and intimidation of U.S. media, however one describes it, would be obligatory in order for the Israel lobby, most visibly represented in the public arena by AIPAC, to maintain its influence over our political processes and national dialogue on issues relating to Israel and the Middle East. AIPAC clearly doesn't want the media writing or talking about that, since it would likely raise questions of dual loyalty and whether Israel's intrusion into American political life might require its own special investigation and registration as a foreign agent. Hence, news about a conference designed to expose that sordid reality, and last Friday was the fifth of such conferences, must be suppressed, and so it was, with Democracy Now! No less than NPR proving to be no exception in maintaining radio silence. At the same time, coverage of AIPAC's annual policy convention, the biggest of its kind that takes place in the nation's capital every spring, the most recent in Washington's convention center over the past 3 days, is very selective, if for no other reason than the media, including members of the Jewish Press Corps, is strictly monitored and restricted from attending what are described as breakout sessions, during which American politicians, primarily members of Congress, can feel free to express their devotion to Israel, a foreign country, without being called out on it later. This led to the editors of one prominent Jewish publication, New York's Jewish Week, to publish an editorial on February 28th explaining with a big headline, quote, why we won't be at the AIPAC conference, end quote. A year ago, noted the paper, we editorialized against the policy of the American Israel Public Affairs Committee, AIPAC, that bars members of the press from attending the great majority of breakout sessions that take place during the pro-Israel lobby's annual national policy conference in Washington, D.C. We argued that by allowing the press to attend the largest and most important gathering of its kind in the Jewish community and then banning coverage of most of its sessions, AIPAC was creating a recipe for quote-unquote frustration and offense, and that it was better to keep us out altogether. Better yet, we said, was to open up the process more widely to the media, reflecting a core value that America and Israel cherish and share in common, freedom of the press, end quote. Despite discussions with AIPAC, the lobbying organization, which has a history of shutting the spotlight and controlling a message, the issue of press access would not be resolved. The Jewish Week editorial said as much, quote, Israel has a long history of being wary of and less than friendly toward the press. Members of the press enter the AIPAC convention through a separate entrance and must be accompanied by staff to proceed to the main area where sessions are held, accompanied to the restrooms at times. Such treatment doesn't foster trust and mutual respect. AIPAC officials, the editorial went on, say the press is overly critical in its coverage of the lobby. Maybe, suggests the Jewish Week editorial, there's a reason that goes beyond political ideology. Trying a more open approach could help, end quote. For most of its seven-decade history, AIPAC made it a point to be bipartisan, and while it has moved dramatically to the right in recent years, support for Israel remains the only issue which, at the beginning and end of the day, members of Congress of both parties not only lock arms but compete for who loves Israel the most. That the same is no longer true of their base has been a concern of Democratic Party leaders. At the last two presidential party conventions, they had to work overtime to stifle grassroots efforts to add planks to the Democratic platform that would condemn Israeli settlements and support Palestinian rights. At the 2016 convention, candidate Hillary Clinton's point person in the Democratic National Committee, Debbie Wasserman Schultz, had Berkeley's liberal black congresswoman Barbara Lee do the hatchet job on the Palestinians, casting the deciding vote against including any issue on the Middle East in the platform, assuming correctly that the news, even if it got out, would not affect her popularity. There is no guarantee that such tactics will work again in 2020, and has the Democratic National Committee understandably concerned. And this is reflected in some of the comments of Democratic politicians who spoke at AIPAC's convention, which was also carried live on C-SPAN 2. Each year, AIPAC's convention is bigger than the one preceding it, usually by 2,000 attendees, according to its press release. And this year's attracted 18,000, a figure not to be argued with after viewing widescreen photos of the packed arena. Like last year, the total reportedly included as guests 4,000 college students and what was speculated earlier to be two-thirds of the members of Congress, each of whose names is slowly read as if on an honor roll. This is intended, no doubt, to let well-heeled AIPAC members know where to send their donations come election time, while allowing those whom some might excuse for selling out, who might accuse of selling out their country, to puff up their chest, if only for a moment. In any case, 32 members of Congress either spoke or were interviewed at the event, 17 of whom were Democrats, 15 Republicans, including, as is the case every year, the most prominent officials in both parties. The comments of Charles Schumer, the ranking Democrat in the Senate, were as usual problematic. Schumer, whose name he claims means in Hebrew defender of the ghetto, seems to have a problem knowing what country he's supposed to defend. At the end of his presentation Monday, one already riddled with mistruths about Palestinians, Schumer recalled how, quote, last summer Congress, Democrats and Republicans together, granted the administration new authority to counter Iran's malign activity. Now it must use it not only to combat Iran, but to push Russia to repel Iranian proxies in Syria. We can never be complacent about any threat near Israel's border, and Iran is a threat right now. So we must do these things and more to ensure Israel's security, end quote. As he has at past AIPAC conferences, the leader of the Democratic Party in the Senate, not an unimportant position, closed his speech with a shout, I'm Israel Chai, Hebrew for the Jewish people live. With some of the speakers, most notably Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, U.S. Representative Nikki Haley, and Vice President Mike Pence, the arena took on the atmosphere and image of a Nuremberg rally. As Palestinian professor Hamid Dabeshi describes it, quote, in these prototypical shots, you see high-ranking U.S. officials, presidents, vice presidents, senators, congresspersons, ambassadors, etc., appearing on a podium with the word AIPAC in capitals, powerfully spread over their chest and shot from a low angle, projecting how powerful they are to the others. Joseph Goebbels and Leni Riefenstahl, noted Habashi, could not have done any better staging a fascist duet of images to project and assert global power, end quote. The most notable presentation had to be that of Nikki Haley, who from her first day on the job as Washington's delegate to the UN Security Council saw part of her job as working for Israel. She not only has made frequent trips there, but most frequently she bragged to her entranced audience how she traveled to Guatemala and Honduras to personally thank their presidents for supporting the U.S. when the General Assembly rejected U.S. recognition of Jerusalem as Israel's capital, and her successful effort to convince the president of Guatemala, Jimmy Gonzalez, to join the U.S. in recognizing Jerusalem as Israel's capital. Gonzalez was rewarded by AIPAC with a prominent speaking spot Sunday night. His appearance must have been particularly distressing to those aware of Israel's prominent role in the massacre of hundreds of thousands of Indians in the Guatemalan highlands in the 1980s, when, after Jimmy Carter cut off military aid to the country for its human rights abuses, Israel rushed in with weapons, uniforms, and training for the country's army of murderers. Haley also repeated Trump's promise to make those countries that did not support the U.S. decision on Jerusalem to pay for it when it came to foreign aid. We were taking names, she proudly said. What was more important and clear from her presentation is that her goal is the White House. The Haaretz reporter also picked up on that. Quote, Nikki Haley wows pro-Israel lobby AIPAC. For me, she's the next president, read its headline. Those were the sentiments of reporter Allison Kaplan Summer, who wrote, quote, if the AIPAC conference had been the GOP Iowa presidential caucuses, U.S. Vice President Mike Pence would be facing a formidable challenge if he aspired to succeed U.S. President Donald Trump. Haley would have beaten him hands down, end quote. In the end, that might be the biggest story from the convention. On the day before his own presentation, Netanyahu and Trump had a friendly 2.5-hour get-together at the White House, during which the Israeli Prime Minister acknowledged what the U.S. media has yet to report. The strategic intelligence agreement signed between the two countries on December 12th to go jointly after Iran. After telling Trump how much Israelis admire him for his decision to recognize Jerusalem as Israel, Netanyahu said, quote, they see your position on Iran. They see your magnificent defense of Israel and the truth in the United Nations. And I, as prime minister, see something that you as president see, but others can't see. It's the extent of our intelligence and other cooperation in matters that are vital for the security of both our peoples. End quote. As I pointed out on previous programs, the Israeli public is aware of that cooperation because the intelligence agreement has been reported in its media. It is only the American public that has been kept in the dark regarding what appears to be the beginning of a plan by both countries to launch a war on Iran that would likely encompass Syria as well as Lebanon, if not begin in one of those two countries. That was the subject of the talk by retired Colonel Lawrence Wilkerson, former Chief of Staff to Colin Powell of the State Department, at the conference on the Israel lobby and American policy that the media did not cover. In his speech to AIPAC, Netanyahu kept up the drumbeat, saying, quote, Iran must be stopped and will be stopped, he said that twice, after ripping once again apart the deal signed with Iran by the U.S. and other four members of the Security Council, plus Germany, that led to Tehran shutting down its nuclear enrichment program and getting rid of the stock of enriched uranium in exchange for ending of economic sanctions. The significant concessions on Iran's part are rarely, if ever, mentioned in the U.S. media. The benefits expected by Iranians following the ending of those sanctions have not materialized and, not surprisingly, has led to divisions in Iranian society between what were called on the West moderates and hardliners. AIPAC, which pressured the Senate to pass a bill obligating the president to certify Iran's compliance with the agreement every 90 days, can take much of the credit or blame for that. The legislation was no problem for Obama, but Trump has made it clear that unless there are changes made to the agreement that are to Israel's liking, and his liking, the U.S. will pull out though this is opposed by all the other signatories and the International Atomic Energy Agency, which has found Iran to be in full compliance with what it promised. Such is the power of Israel over what is purportedly the world's only superpower, and it was on full display in all its ugliness at the AIPAC convention. On the stage of the Washington Convention Center, Netanyahu was clearly in his element, saying, after all, I'm the prime minister, and he abandoned the podium to stride back and forth across the long stage, talking into a concealed microphone as if he was a nightclub entertainer and not a politician, hounded by the police in Israel on charges of corruption and on the verge of indictment and a possible prison term. On a local note, back in 2015, in a story that is relevant for this moment, our representative in Congress, Jared Huffman, had the temerity to criticize Netanyahu when the Israeli prime minister was invited to speak to a joint session of Congress by then-House Speaker John Boehner in a last-ditch attempt to sabotage Obama's nuclear deal with Iran. Responding to Netanyahu's warning that the nuclear deal being negotiated with Iran is a bad one, according to the Marin Independent Journal, Huffman said, quote, this is a prime minister who's never seen a war he didn't want our country to fight, end quote. And as Huffman reacted to Netanyahu's speech, according to the paper, staunch supporters of Israel reacted to Huffman's reaction. Michael Harris of San Rafael, one of the founders of the San Francisco Voice for Israel, a branch of the hardcore Stand With Us group, said, I know that Congressman Huffman is pro-Israel. His pro-Israel credentials are impeccable, which is why I'm disappointed in the comment. If you look at Netanyahu's speech, nowhere in there is he making any reference whatsoever to military action, Harris said. He's simply saying that the alternatives to a bad deal is a better deal, and Israel, more than any other country, requires an effective deal to peacefully resolve the issue, end quote. Huffman replied, yeah, but he set hypothetical bars so high for what would constitute a good deal, in his opinion, that he was effectively taking a diplomatic solution off the table, end quote. Huffman, who attended Netanyahu's speech, unlike some of four dozen House and Senate Democrats who boycotted it, said Netanyahu's judgment has proved fallible in the past. He implored us to go to war in Iraq, Huffman said, telling us that if we took out Saddam Hussein, that the entire region would be stabilized and good things would come as a result. He implored us to go to war in Syria over chemical weapons when, in fact, we were able to find a negotiated solution to that problem. It's still ugly in Syria, but it would have been much uglier had we heeded his advice, end quote. Those are the words of Representative Jared Huffman back in 2015 that might have been spoken today. I emailed the congressman yesterday to see if it had anything more to say on the subject. As of this morning, I hadn't heard back from him. This is Jeff Blankford. Thanks for listening.